Hey everyone, this amazing ESO Network show is brought to you by our fine sponsor, Amazon.com. Please remember to shop Amazon for all your geeky needs, no matter what time of the year it is. All you need to do is go to ESOpodcast.com/ESOAmazon or click on the Amazon banner on the ESO Network webpage to go to our e-store. It's the best way to shop and the best way to support this program, and it doesn't cost you anything extra. Okay, that's enough of me babbling for now. Now on with your regular scheduled show.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
And I'm Brad Jackson.
Ho, ho, ho! It's our Christmas
episode.
What'd
you call me?
Ho, 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 ho.
All right, that's it. You're on the naughty list.
And as all episodes of Cigar Nerds Podcast, brought to you by Strike Force Energy. And this time it was definitely brought to you by Strike Force Energy because I waited till the night before to watch all these Christmas movies. So Strike Force kept me going through the night in my research department.
We're going to see how good at, retaining your thoughts and everything were, because I've been able to stay up for extended a period of time. But I wasn't necessarily coherent after I went and replayed back my notes.
Yeah. And also, one of our listeners, my girlfriend, recently had a car accident and broke her collarbone. And I told her just rub a little Strike Force on it. And I'm not saying it helped, but I think she's feeling a lot better, after a couple doses of the Strike Force. So, yeah, I'm not a doctor. I can't claim it's medical expertise. But, I mean, whatever helps you, helps you. Also, as with Santa Claus delivering packages worldwide, so does Strike Force Energy. So go to StrikeForceEnergy.com, use the promo code CigarNerds, and enjoy yourself a little holiday cheer. Hashtag kick the can.
I like it.
And now that we're all energized and in the holiday spirit, what are you smoking this week, Brad?
Well, we've got ourselves a little present this week. So this is a cigar called the Oscar. And folks may be thinking, wait, you guys talked about something from Oscar called the Leaf previously. That cigar turned out to be really good. This one here, I have been excited to get on air and review for quite some time now.
Yeah, this is their latest cigar from Oscar Valladares Tobacco. The Oscar, it's a Ecuadorian Habano wrapper, Honduran binder, and Nicaraguan fillers, with the Honduran tobacco coming from the first production run of his new farm. And since it is Christmas, it comes wrapped in a candela cigar or tobacco leaf, so it's nice bright green, and you have to kind of unwrap it like a present when it's time to smoke. So thought it was fitting for our Christmas episode.
Absolutely. And I love getting gifts. And to me, this is a treat. I've smoked the cigar a few times before, just for personal enjoyment. So, like I said, I'm really excited to get on air and talk about this. So
yeah, this is the
this
first
is
time.
Definitely a more full cigar. With the habano, you're getting some of that, a little bit of spice. I mean, this has just got every flavor profile that I dig in a cigar.
Yeah, it's the first time I've had this particular cigar, but I did like the leaf and the Island Gem. So far, I'm liking this thing too. So.
And one of the things I really enjoy about this cigar is just the smoothness of the draw. Yeah. I mean, it takes absolutely zero effort to get a good draw on this cigar. Therefore, it leads to a good burn and
nice big clouds of smoke. I think it's going to be a good one.
And this coming in, the cigar comes in at a 5x50. So if you're, not big into the whole 60 ring gauge craze, this is a nice value cigar that I enjoy time and time again. And, when I feel like treating myself, this is what I find gravitating.
Yeah, but if you are into the 6x60, it does come in three sizes, the Robusto 5x50, Toro 6x52, and the 60 6x60.
Yeah, and, I think I like this one because it almost gives off like a coca flavor, if you will. Like, I don't know. I mean,
coca? It's time to call in the snowman. dashing through the snow.
Jesus.
Sorry, I watched a couple 70s movies last night.
Yeah, I can tell.
And to kind of introduce our topic, yeah, we've done the un-Christmas movies, because, you know, to me, my Christmas tradition is always, you know, watch some Die Hard, and it's not Christmas till I see Hans Gruber fall off of Nakatomi Tower. That's well established. Last year, we did bad Christmas movies. So this year, we kind of looked into a rare commodity that I, until I delved into, really didn't realize there was that many of them, but Christmas-themed horror movies.
Yeah, and then there's a lot out there that we're not going to talk about today, so, you know, just, you know, and our little sampling, we made, what, like a top five, top six, you know, type list, yeah. And
but like when we...
all list, because you're hearing this on the internet, it's got to be true.
So, yeah, if you have some other suggestions, you know, feel free to post it on our Facebook or email us at cigarnerdpodcast@gmail.com. You'll let us know.
Yeah, and I'm always the cheesier, the better.
Yeah.
Like, I love a good B horror flick. And surprisingly, I didn't get that out of the films we're going to talk about, which was amazing.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And welcome back to the podcast. It's time to get jolly like a fat man does.
I like it.
Ho, ho, ho. I'm Santa and I know it.
We've already used that.
Yeah.
But that just really helps get in the spirit.
Yeah. If you've not listened to it before, we did make a Christmas playlist at one point called, I think it's still on YouTube, the Cigar Nerds Christmas Mixtape. If you go check that out, we put a whole bunch of like alternative Christmas music for people who's tired of the same, like, you know, Christmas classics. But yeah, this week we're talking about which I didn't realize it was this big of a genre, the Christmas-themed horror movies. I mean, when we were originally trying to find movies to watch, we Googled, and there was a top 20 list of the top 20 Christmas horror films, and I was like, I didn't realize there was enough to make a top 20 list. But apparently this is a thing.
Well, I mean, I in looking at it, I ran across a few things from IFC. I ran across some other stuff that were just straight to kind of video production. So there were films that didn't get major, you know, theatric releases or anything. One of the biggest films, I think, that if you mention anything about Christmas horror that's going to come to people's mind is one name, Krampus. And funny how we're really not going to talk about that much this episode.
It did not even make the top 20 list I looked at, even though there's been a few recent Krampus movies. We did meet Krampus the other night. We did go to the Netherworld, opened up for a special kind of Christmas edition.
And I gotta give a shout out, man. That whole concept was really interesting. Not allowing groups of six, you had a tour guide and a rope that, you know, you held on to, and, you know, basically your guide controlled the pace, which I really like, because a lot of people, they get scared or whatever, and they immediately just take off running and pass by, like, all the other scenes and
yeah, this
stuff
one was like
that.
You got scared, there was nowhere to go, because your guide had you there, and you know, also the...
And just, it was awesome, too, because he made it a point to trigger everything as you're walking through. So it just added that extra
usually
dynamic.
You're going through with a line of people. So that's like been the first time that like I've really gone through at that slow a pace where you really had time to look at everything. Because I barely get scared anymore, but it was cool being able to like really see the show in action.
Yes, absolutely. And the holiday flair, too, was kind of nice.
I mean, they had a snow machine in the parking lot, and, you know, Jack Frost was running around nipping at everybody's nose. And if you look at our Facebook page, I did get a photo of Jack Frost.
I think I died.
Yeah.
So it was all around a good time. And, you know, I would like to see, you know, more off-season stuff like that. You know, I think Valentine's Day would be freaking phenomenal.
So are we going to do a Valentine's horror movie episode? Because there is a couple Valentine's-themed horror movies out there that I remember. I know it's like My Valentine, Bloody Valentine, or something like that.
Bullet for My Valentine. Anyway, I think that was a tangent.
So, you want to start us off with your first Christmas choice?
Yeah, so, you know...
Unwrap it, as you will.
My first, you know, treasure on the list, and I got to say, like, as we talk about these movies, like, you know, we had an off-the-air conversation just talking about what was our least favorite, and I got to say, like, I thought these would all be pretty crappy movies, but they all turned out to be pretty decent.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't go through the whole list of 20, and I will post the link to that, because there's still a couple on there that I did not have time to watch that I think I'm going to go back and watch just, you know, for my own enjoyment instead of podcasting purposes, because they're just, the descriptions of the movies looked pretty interesting. There's even one currently up on Netflix that I haven't watched called, like, A Christmas Horror Story. So I'm like, and it looked like it was like Santa Claus battling Krampus. So I'm like, that looks interesting. I'm going to check that one out, too.
So, you know, back on topic. So depending on which country you're in, depends on what title of this film you got. The original was called Scent. You know, this was originally a Dutch film, but it was released as Saint in Europe and Saint Nick here in the United States. And it's basically a, you know, 2010, they call it a dark comedy horror film. I really didn't see too much of the comedic elements, so maybe
maybe the Dutch have a different sense of humor than we do.
It may just be a different culture. Like
yes, this is hilarious. Or I don't have a Dutch accent. That's the best I can. I don't even know what a Dutch person sounds like. I can get accents on you, but that one is not in my repertoire.
Yeah. So you know, I gotta say, like, it was really interesting, you know, following the premise of this film. So basically, you get either a bishop or, you know, a priest, and he basically goes around and, you know, murders all the naughty kids. And actually, it really doesn't matter if you make the naughty or the nice list. Like, pretty much just goes and starts murdering a whole bunch of people. You know, kids, adults alike. There's really no discrimination with this guy.
Yeah, apparently the name Scent came from, you know, in their language, instead of Santa Claus, it's Sinterklaas. So that's, I guess, where the saint came from. And murderous ghost Santa Claus.
Yeah, but, you know, this was kind of cool because it opens up basically set in, like, the 1400s. You know, where basically, you know, a former bishop, Nicholas, is killed by villagers who, you know, refuse to put up with, you know, the gang's looting and killing and stuff like that. So basically what they would do is roll into town and, you know, torment everybody and put a list and say, these are all the items we require in order to, you know, not continue pillaging your village and the whole nine yards. So, you know, a couple interesting pitchfork deaths. I nice. Always, you know, enjoy
like a good pitchfork in a horror movie.
I mean, that's the thing. Like,
it's
I mean,
a lost art.
It almost took me back to the days of Frankenstein, you know, when the villagers are like chasing Frankenstein. That's kind of what I felt like here. So there was some resemblance and I was familiar. But the other thing that I thought was interesting is the date of December 5th, because that is a recurring theme throughout many of these films. And, you know, I mean, we talked back in November when we did our V for Vendetta episode, so you got V, you know, remember the 5th of November. Well, if shit, you know, doesn't pan out then just, you know, tuck your tails because, you know, here comes Santa Claus December 5th to murder.
In this case, you know, Santa Claus is coming to town as more of a threat than a...
Yes. And that's originally where, you know, the whole Scent title came from, is Santa wasn't this jolly fellow or anything. Basically, in modern day Christmas, it's like all of the old history and lore had been forgotten, so now it's...
Well, the jolly fat man in the suit that we all know and love today actually came from Coca-Cola. It was...
Yeah, exactly. That
those original imagery you see was from a Coca-Cola, you know, advertising campaign back in, what, the 40s or something like that. But, you know, if you get back into the farther reaches of the Santa Claus legends, you get stuff like either he himself was someone who, you know, rewarded the good kids and punished the naughties, or he had his flip side of Krampus that would come and kidnap all the kids and beat the shit out of the naughty ones.
Yeah,
so it's like, you know, had some darker origins that have now been, you know, modernized and commercialized.
And to make it even a little bit darker. So, you know, throughout this film, you see, you know, bits of soot, you know, as we would call it, left behind. But instead of it being soot from going down the chimney and dropping off gifts and stuff,
Brimstone.
Basically this was ashes from his burned victims.
Nice.
So, you know.
Yeah, because now it's like, you know, from him going down all the chimneys, but, yeah, in this version it's all, you know, hellfire and brimstone.
And I thought it was crazy, you know, his freaking horse running on the rooftops and stuff was just crazy instead of the whole reindeers and everything. So, you know, and his, you know, oh, what is it? The Crozier, Crosier, the freaking, like, staff that he has.
Huh.
And basically just, you know, sharp edges, the whole nine yards. So, you know, quite a few pretty violent deaths.
Ooh. Interesting. I did not have time to watch that one. But, yeah, that sounds,
yeah.
sounds spooky.
Yeah, so it was, you know, pretty cool. You know,
also, Christmas movie directed by Dickmas, or Dickmas, however you pronounce his name. I was like, that's kind of funny.
But, yeah, this was rather, you know, I mean, it had the dark elements. And like I said, there may have been, you know, a little bit of a culture barrier because – either that or I just wasn't looking for the comedic elements and completely overmissed them. But, you know, this wasn't a bad film, you know, by any means.
Yeah, the comedy may have got lost in translation somewhere.
Yes.
If we spoke, you know, the original Dutch, who might have got the jokes.
But it was, you know, really cool because, you know, with this here, basically, you know, the church doesn't want, you know, this getting out that all these murders are happening or everything. So the media does this whole big cover-up where, you know, oh, this person was killed by explosives, or this person, you know, fell and mysteriously died.
This time of year.
Exactly. So everything, you know, was designed to throw people off of the trail so they didn't live in fear that this folklore was actually truth. You know, and it was like, you know, toward the, you know, the end of the film, it was something like, you know, oh, last year we had 162 deaths. This year, over 300. This can't get out. And, like, the one survivor is essentially paid off, you know, by the church to, you know, not reveal his story or anything to that extent. So,
interesting.
If you like pirates, if you, you know, like Christmas, if you, you know, like just weird folklore in general, this film kind of has it all.
It kind of reminds me of the new Pirates of the Caribbean trailer, which we'll probably talk about later, but those ghost pirates in that. But yeah, as long as we're talking about non-English language films, let's talk about another one that we both actually saw, Rare Exports, A Christmas Tale.
Yeah, and this is going to be a Finnish, you know, film here.
Came out in 2010, directed by Jalman Hollander. But, yeah, it's the... I mean, there's some English in the movie, but most of it's in, I guess, Finnish or... might have been Russia, because the Russian, because they said something about, you know, Russia at one point. But, yeah, this one was kind of a funny film, going with the dark Santa Claus. Somewhere in this remote village, there's a mountain, and then there's a mining operation going on top of the mountain. And what they're actually doing is trying to dig up... It's the whole mountain is actually a burial mound where, you know, long, long time ago, apparently, you know, the legend of Krampus was running around killing people and whatnot, and they lured him in and froze him in ice and buried him in this mountain, and this company is trying to dig him up for, I don't know, profit of some kind. They never really explain why they want Santa Claus, other than, I guess they're going to make some money off of it.
Well, I mean, I would say that money is always a driving factor, right? But, I mean, this was probably one of the most unique renditions of the tale. You know, and I like the fact, too, because this didn't just center around one bad guy, per se. You know, he had an entire gang of, you know, these elf-like characters that would actually go and capture the children and everything to that extent.
Yeah, just when there's a couple kids, Pieter Cunito and his father, who are basically, his father runs a slaughterhouse, and basically every year they round up all these reindeer and, you know, make, you know, a lot of, like, something like $85,000 is the money on exporting reindeer meat and stuff at this time of year. But, you know, the mining operation is stirring up wolf activity, and something wipes out all the reindeer. So they're pretty much going to, you know, starve if, or, you know, or go out of business, because when they're normally got like a herd of 500, only two reindeer survive, and they all think it's this, you know, mining operation. So they set up these wolf traps with like wooden spikes in the ground and lure him in. And, well, they find this old dude falls in the trap, and they think he's one of the miners. So they're like, well, we're going to ransom this dude off. Turns out they think he's Santa Claus. And the only person who believes in all this is, you know, the son, who has like read all these, you know, old books about the old version, you know, origins of Santa Claus, and is convinced that he's going to come punish all of them. So he's got, he's wearing like football hockey armor and has a metal plate over his butt, cause he's seen these photos of like the Krampus, like whipping the crap out of kids with like a branch and stuff. So he armor plates his butt just in case he gets spanked. And, you know, they eventually, like, well, you know, figure out that these American miners are looking for Santa Claus. So they try to sell him back to the mining. And they're like, this is, he's like, everybody, you know, just move away slowly. And they're like, what are you talking about? And he's like, this isn't Santa Claus. It's one of his elves. And then all these like naked, like, you know, bearded dudes like come out of the, out of nowhere and start killing everybody after they've already captured all the kids and set them up as a sacrifice to the actual Santa Claus, who is still frozen in ice. And it's not, no jolly fat man. It's a big horn demon. Yes. As you know, if you've ever seen the traditional drawings of Krampus, that's pretty much what it looked like. And they had stolen, before they found these guys, apparently they had stolen every like heater or hair dryer and everything in the town, and was trying to defrost them.
Yes. You know, but I gotta say, like, this movie here actually, you know, was probably one of the most story-driven films. Yeah. And I think that was one of the things that made this film so likable is, you know, I walked away from this, you know, this was kind of based on a short film back in, like, 2003 or something like that, is where this original rare export premise kind of came to be. But you know, it kept you enthralled. And the fact, too, that, you know, so much of the film gets spoken in, you know, native tongue. So, you know, us as a English viewer, we have to read the subtitles. But I thought it was a cool break to really, you know, have to dive in and get, you know, mentally invested in the film.
Yeah, and it's kind of funny because, like, the main character of the kid, Pieter, or however you pronounce his name,
Petri.
He was kind of a pussy at the first of it, you know, because this is a town of hard dudes. This is a town of hunters and, you know.
Well, think you're in the ocean. I'm sorry, you're in the mountains. The temperatures there are probably, you know, single digits or, you know, below zero.
I mean, this is a place where you work with your hands and have to hunt for your food. And this kid seems a little, you know, scared of that. You know, he doesn't really want to, you know, shoot and hunt, where everyone else is even like, yet as a kid's like carrying a shotgun, because this is just how you live in this environment. Because if it's not the environment that's going to kill you, it's all the wolves and stuff that they're apparently scared of. But, you know, by the end, he's like the only one that believes like this whole Santa Claus thing. And he's like, you know, I got a plan. Like he like just completely mans up and like, you know, tells him dad, like, all right, he's like, I'm going to go do my job. Y'all go do your job. And we're going to save the town. And just like, it's like completely badass.
In a lot of ways, you can really view this as a coming of age film. You know, this is, you know, you're put against extraordinary odds, and, you know, in that, you know, one character has to step up and become, you know, extraordinary themselves.
So, yeah, and
you
know, it's this little kid.
It's this kid, you know, and it's like, here's what we're going to do. And, you know, he puts together this entire, you know, plan, basically, you know, to kind of set a little bit more backstory is, you know, it's the naughty kids that, you know, get rounded up and everything else to basically...
Yeah, because step back, before you even get introduced the whole, like, we're finding Santa Claus, you know, the mine foreman is telling whoever the guy paying for all this is like, we found something, we've hit ice. And he's like, well, here's the new safety rules. You must follow these rules.
It was sawdust.
Yeah, you said sawdust, and he's like, this is weird. You know, it's definitely not a tree. It's because the level of sawdust is like 65 feet deep. And he's like, well, back in the day, they used sawdust as insulation to protect ice. So we found what we're looking for. And he's like, here's the new safety rules. Follow this. And it was basically how not to be naughty. It was like, no drinking, no cussing, no smoking. He's like, because apparently, you know, that triggers these elves to go jack you up.
Yes.
And there's not just like one, you know, we see the one elf, but no, there's like 100 of these things. So the kids like come up with a plan where he's like, well, I'm going to use all, because they'd already gathered up all the naughty children. So they got a helicopter, and they're like, the building we're, it's funny, there's the thing too, because he's so like scared of Santa Claus that he has one of those advent calendars where you open up the door for every day and it has like a little thing. And he's like stapling shut the 24 because he's like, does not want to open up the Christmas Eve one, because but when they find where the actual Santa Claus is, he's in like warehouse 24, so it looks kind of like the doors.
And he's like the final door.
Yeah, but he goes in there and the thing's frozen in ice, and he's like, we're surrounded by these elves. There's no way out unless we lure them away. So they, you know, his buddy distracts him with gingerbread cookies. He comes out and he's like, showing them all gingerbread cookies. I'm like, all right, you pass. You got, you know, gingerbread cookies. And goes and gets the helicopter. So they gather up all the naughty kids and lure the elves into their reindeer pen. And the kid is like on the side of the big bag full of the cargo net full of kids, and like, you know, luring the, and like, just completely badass. And they even like tries to sacrifice himself because he's like, oh, the gate's open, we can't get him in the pen. He's like, tell my dad what I did, and like jumps out of the helicopter and like goes and opens the pen and lures all the elves in while his dad's like, you know, trying to dynamite Santa Claus.
Yes.
So they end up, like, you know, blowing up Santa Claus, and all the elves, like, stop fighting because they're like, oh, we don't have anyone to follow anymore. What do we do? And then that's where it gets super weird. Like, the post-climax that I think is absolutely hilarious, because they're like, because they were trying to ransom off the one elf for $85,000. Yep. Watch, they lost. And they're like, how much is, you know, 150 elves worth, and like 85,000 times whatever, like, yeah, 9 million. It was like, so they spend a year cleaning these dudes up and teaching them to be traditional Santa Clauses, and then sell them off to different countries. Like, hey, we've got a live Santa Claus, and that's where the whole rare exports thing come along. That's the company they start to sell Santa Clauses to the masses.
Yeah, and it was funny too, you know, when they're like actually going through the training, you know, because basically they have like this, you know, baby doll with a gift, and, you know, over and over they're, you know, showing coddle the baby, hand the gift nicely, and like, yeah, you know, one of the elves or something like tries to snip or something, then
like no. Yeah, he tries to open the present, not for you, present for the kid. Just, yeah, it's like this whole like, because, you know, they can walk around naked in the cold, they're very resilient, but they're basically just, you know, slaves of this, the Santa Claus. They didn't talk. They didn't really, you know, do it. They were just kind of like weird monster creatures. But yeah, after, I mean, Santa Claus is gone, they trained them all to be holly jolly.
Here's what I felt like. It was World War Z with elves.
Yeah, because they were kind of zombie-like, especially, yes, when like the horde of them is attacking the group. Yeah, it's, but it was so funny. They like just, you know, housebroke all the all the elves and taught them how to be Santa Clauses. Oh, yeah, that was a kind of an amusing twist on it.
Yeah, so the story and everything else far surpassed any, you know, intentions or, you know, preconceived notions that I had. Like,
oh,
I thought this was going to be a very bottom of the barrel movie. That was not the case.
And another one that was kind of a big one on the Christmas movie list is a movie called Black Christmas, which got a more recent remake in 2006, but the original came out in 1974.
Yeah, and you had an opportunity. I watched the remake. I think you watched both of them, right?
Yeah. And the original, you know, actually was directed by Bob Clark, stars Olivia Hussey, Carrie Dulia, John Saxon, and someone you may know, Margot Kidder, who was the original Lois Lane in the, you know, the first Superman movies. And this was, you know, I think released like four years or so before the Superman movies. And it's basically a serial killer escapes and returns to his family home, and he's completely nuts. But now his former family home is a sorority house. And he kind of sneaks in, is like living in the walls, watching people, and, you know, working his way through murdering all these sorority girls, as one did in the 70s in a horror movie.
A killer came home!
But the thing was, it was like, there's a, one of the things in the movie that I had seen, talked about in other horror movies, I've seen this thing quoted a lot, but I had no idea the origin of this particular thing. Because as the night goes through, the girls keep, as they keep disappearing, they're getting these obscene phone calls. Because, you know, back in the day, before caller ID and Star 69 and all that stuff, you could get away with making prank phone calls. So getting a dirty phone call in the 70s was quite common, apparently. So,
I mean, that was a common thing even when I was a kid. Like, there was no caller ID then.
So, you know, as they're progressing, you know, they finally call the cops in because, you know, one of the girls is missing and they think she may have run off because her father came to pick her up and she didn't show up. So, and they end up finding this child had been murdered out in the park. So, you know, they finally get freaked out by these phone calls and the cops are like, all right, we're going to trace the call. And it's like, you know, this is back in the day when it was like a very mechanical process where someone at the phone company literally had to trace lines and whatnot. Well, there's a point where they finally trace the call and they're like, oh, it's coming from inside the house. It's coming on a different line. And yeah, so that thing where, you know, they call, they're like, get out of the house. The phone calls are coming from inside the house. You know, just run. Like, I'd never know the origin of that particular story scenario. And apparently it was the original Black Christmas.
Ah, okay. Makes sense. So, you know, me not have seen this one, you know, the remake kind of had some of those same... you know, pretenses. I think, you know, as we were talking about previously, like one of the things about the original is it did not give you any backfill or backstory as to...
Yeah, that's one of the things in this one. There's no explanation of the killer. He's just there and killing people. In fact, you never even see his face. It's very much like some of, like, you know, maybe Friday the 13th and stuff where it's pretty much all the killer scene is shot from first person perspective. So most of the time you might see his hands or the knife or whatever he uses to kill people, but you never really get a good look at his face.
I would almost say, you know, maybe like some of the early Michael Myers films then, you know,
because there's even like an aspect of it. There's one of the girls, you know, is, as we've discussed in old slasher movies, anyone promiscuous or having some kind of moral failing is going to die. Well, one of the girls is pregnant and she's supposedly going to have an abortion and tells her boyfriend that, no, I don't want to marry you. I'm going to get an abortion. So there's a whole thing where they all think it's him, is the one making the phone calls. And as they,
I mean, makes sense. There's a motive there.
And as they figure out, you know, that, you know, the killer's in the house, or, you know, once they realize people are getting killed, as a dumbass, the cops are like, get the fuck out of the house. We're on our way. And they're like, I got to go make sure my friends are okay. They're like, get the fuck out of the house. But no, she goes upstairs, finds all her friends dead and realizes, like, she's the... But she gets attacked, but never really sees the guy's face. So her boyfriend comes in, because apparently he's been watching, you know, to save her. And she ends up killing him, thinking that he's the killer. But there's really no definite... So, like, you know, they're like, oh, well, he just snapped and whatnot. You know, the cops clear the house and stuff. But no one... but, you know, and then, you know, as it's... You know, everyone leaves and they're waiting for, like, you know, the CSI guys or whatever to come in. You know, you hear his voice again up in the attic and the phone starts ringing. Yeah, so it's like, oh no, you just accidentally killed your boyfriend.
All right, so.
Yeah, it's kind of one of those dark, you know, more modern horror movies. You know, there's got to be a outcome where, you know, the lone survivor kills the bad guy. But you know, in the 70s, they're like, no, we're going to leave it dark. He's still in the attic.
So,
but one of my favorite characters in this movie is the house mom of the sorority, who is like a closet alcoholic, and she has whiskey bottles hidden everywhere in the house. There's like one scene where he's like the girls go upstairs and she opens like, I don't know, a Bible or something that's on a bookshelf, and there's a bottle of whiskey in it. Later on, she's brushing her teeth, and she got a bottle of whiskey hidden in the back of the toilet. A shoebox with a bottle of whiskey. Like, she had, like, whiskey stashed everywhere. And then she got a hook to the head, so. The whiskey did not help her.
What are we going to do with all that leftover whiskey? Quick, we need to find this house.
Yeah. That and someone got killed with a unicorn, so I give it props for originality of your murder weapon, because Margot Kidder's character collects those glass figurines, and she has one that's like a head of a unicorn, and she gets stabbed to death with the unicorn horn.
All right.
So, and as you said, 2006, they decided to remake this classic.
And based on what you described, and you know, just kind of what I've read comparing the original to the 2006 remake, is it's, you know, it's loosely, you know, kind of based on the original Black Christmas, but it's not, I guess, you know, a 100%, you know, true remake or something to that extent. So, you know, this one was interesting. I like the fact that it really went into Billy's, you know, childhood, and, you know, this one to me definitely had that, you know, almost Michael Myers sense, you know, where the killer's locked up in the sane asylum, and apparently, you know, every year he tries to escape.
Yeah, this one, like I said, came out in 2006, directed by Glenn Morgan. And if you're a fan of Arrow, a fan of Arrow, stars Katie Cassidy, Michelle Trachtenberg, Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Oliver Hudson, Lacey Chabert, and a couple others. But yeah, it's, this one definitely does a better job of explaining the backstory of, because the first one, there's no mention of like who this killer is or what.
It was a very twisted,
yeah,
incestuous backstory.
Yeah, where like, these girls are living in the sorority house, and they all know the legend that, you know, okay, there was a serial killer that, or a mass murderer that lived here. And they even like give him a Christmas present, you know, as a joke kind of every year at their Christmas party.
Yeah, that was a weird thing. It's always like, hey, this is a secret Santa. Who drew Billy's name? And it's like, well, nobody can say because it's a secret.
Yeah, so yeah, this kid was, you know, his mom hated him. Thing basically,
yeah, he had some kind of liver disease that,
yeah,
made
so
his
he
skin
was like,
yellow.
You know, bright,
which
yellow.
Really felt like Sin City.
Yeah. So she, like, you know, kills his father, who was the only one who was nice to him, and like locks him in the attic and ends up molesting him and having a sister daughter. who's you know, yeah, they treat as a normal child. And finally Billy snaps and like cuts his sister's eyes out, kills his stepdad, kills his mom, and then cuts her up with gingerbread cookie cutters and cooks skin cookies. And now is in an insane asylum and
yeah,
manages
and
to break out.
That was kind of the weird thing. Like, there's a scene where, you know, they're passing out, you know, kind of like the equivalent of Christmas dinner to all of the, you know, captured, you know, I guess.
Criminally insane.
Criminally insane, I guess is a good way to put it. But anyway, like, they're like, yeah, it's chicken because chicken tastes like his mom or something like that. And I was like, yeah, the fuck?
Yeah, because there's this like Santa Claus that wanders into the the wrong ward, and they're like he's like, is that Billy, you know, whatever his name is? And he's like, yeah. He's like, oh, that's a legend. I thought he was, no, he's here. Keeps trying to break out every, he's like, he looks at it, he's like, tastes just like chicken because it is chicken. That's the only thing that tastes like his mom or something like that. And they're like something creepy. But yeah, of course he breaks out. And as
and
we,
the way that he breaks out is pretty ingenious. Like, you know, I mean, because a few times, like the little cell door, you know, where you can pass through, you know, whatever, hand stuff to.
Yeah, he sends like a little present, and the guard opens up and it says, yeah, I'm going to be home for Christmas. He's like, whatever, and opens up and doesn't see him inside and sees where he's like cut a hole in the wall. So he goes, you know, rookie mistake, goes in and looks in the hole, but no, Billy's really hiding under the bed and pops out and kills the guy.
With a sharpened candy cane, of all things. Like, but I guess it doesn't take much, you know, a candy cane to the jugular will do it every time.
I mean, I've stabbed myself in the mouth a couple times on a sharp candy cane. I mean, it does hurt. You could probably break the skin with that. But yeah, you know, and of course, just like the original, you know, sorority girls keep disappearing and, but yeah, but the weird thing was like, it kind of confused me at the start because, you know, it's showing Billy's backstory, but then it's also showing him escaping the insane asylum, and it's showing the girl starting to die. And you're not sure if how the timeline lines up, but you're like, wait a minute, people are dead before he ever escaped the insane asylum. And they found out, no, as most remakes, you know, not just one killer now, we got two, because his weird, incestuous sister-daughter with the one eye, because he popped out an eye, is in the house already and you know, started the game before he shows up.
Yeah, that was just... That aspect of things is really weird. And I got to say, like, maybe this was... What year did Hostel come out?
Oh, I don't remember. It's like, early 2000s.
Because, like, the whole, like, the eyeball is a running gag throughout this whole film. Like, yeah, you know,
not only is he decorating the tree that he has up in his creepy murder attic, you know, but he's eating them as well. And, yeah, it's weird. But
because that's the thing, like, you know, where, like, his... You know, I think it was his mom or something like that, his first victim, and he's got the eyeball there or whatever.
Oh, no, it was his sister. He attacks her and pulls her eyeball out, but she survives.
Like, that to me, I was like, all right, I just rewatched Hostel all over again.
That, too, and the you're also like, all right, because they introduced the whole sister story. I'm like, well, maybe his sister is there helping him kill people. And there's one character who's the kind of the nerdy girl. And, you know, given, like, hand-wrapped presents with old newspaper and stuff, you're like, oh, she's secretly the daughter who has come back to kill people. You know, because they break into her room at one point and find, like, all these photos and stuff and news clippings of the original murders. And no, apparently she's just one of those weird art chicks and is a little obsessed with the story of Billy because, you know, as you assume she's the killer, you know, no, that's just a joke on you because they open the door and find her with her head cut off in her car. They're like, well, shit, that goes that theory.
Yeah. Like, there were a couple of times throughout this film where I was like, ah, that's got to be the person. And then it's like, oh, wait, nope, never mind. That person's history.
Yeah, and it's most like, you know, modern horror movies, there's always the cliche of you think the killer's dead, and nope, he comes right back because they managed the surviving two girls, which one being Katie Cassidy. And one of the other girl's sisters, you know, pretty much burns the house down, and they think they get him. But no, they come back to life in the morgue and decide to finish the job where she has to, like, you know, takes out the sister with, like, a pair of, like, the shock paddles, and then, you know, ends up, you know, fighting Billy and knocking him off, and he lands on a Christmas tree and gets impaled by a Christmas tree, which was a great image. It was a nice overhead shot, and you still see, like, the lower half of the tree, the lights all blinking, and Christmas music is playing. And
just the occasional twitch.
Yeah.
Which, that whole twitch, like, it never looped, but I'm like, so did that really kill him? Like, I don't know, you know? I
mean, it wasn't through the heart, it was more through the guts area, so it, yeah... I'm pretty sure there's massive blood loss, but...
I mean, he survived, possibly, you know, being trapped in the walls. And that was kind of the interesting thing about, you know, Billy's childhood and the development they showed is, like, him punching holes through the drywall and stuff like that and navigating, you know, through the house, you know, to get outside of the attic that they tried to trap him in, so...
Yeah, and all these little, like, creep where he's, like, you know, staring at, like, at the girls through, like, little holes in the wall or one of them, either her, him, or sister one, yeah... But yeah, that was just creepy as shit. Like, just the single eye, like, looking at you through the wall, just was...
That or, you know, the whole, you know, time when they're calling the cell phone and you can see the cell phone light up through the hole in the ceiling, yeah, and stuff. Like, that's your indication that you're in the wrong place.
Yeah, because that was one thing, you know, being in the modern era, you can't get away with the whole... You know, the calls coming from inside the house, we don't have caller ID anymore. So as they're picking off the girls, he's making or she's making the prank calls with that girl's cell phone. So as someone dies, every time someone dies, they get another prank call, and it's from the most recent victim's cell phone.
Yeah, so I thought that was, you know, a kind of a clever way to tie technology into, you know, everything. But yeah, the whole defibrillator thing. So if you're going to be trapped in a hospital, if ever you have a killer after you, make sure there's a defibrillator in the room.
Yeah.
And you might want to just go ahead and charge the paddles just for good measure.
Yeah, just bring that thing all the way up, attach it to her head, and you're going to, you know, do some barbecuing.
Yeah, you know, I think the only reason that didn't work are, you know, is because she didn't yell clear. Because that's, yeah, always the thing, like, when you're using the clear! Like, there was no clear, so you just got brain fried.
Yeah. And that brings us to another couple of movies that had an old version and the new modern version. Silent Night, Deadly Night, which this one came out in 1984, directed by Charles Seller Jr. That one, this was another one that was kind of weird. But it like, not only did I not know there was Christmas horror movies, I didn't know there was a Christmas horror movie series, because this spawned five sequels and then a, you know, remake, and a loosely based remake in 2012.
So I did not see all five sequels. In fact, I don't even think I saw this one, because I said Silent Night, Deadly Night. I didn't look at the release year. Like, I thought that was a continuation of Silent Night. But, all right, 1984 yeah. and 2012, big year gap.
Because this basically starts off with a young kid, Billy Chapman, played by Robert Wilson.
Wait. So, we got Billy again?
Yeah, apparently Billy is like your default killer name, psycho killer name.
All right.
So, yeah, basically, it starts off with a family going to visit a grandpa who's in a mental ward, and he's completely comatose. And the parents leave young Billy here with his grandpa while they go to the doctor to talk about his dad's condition. Well, dad's like, you know, wakes up and like tells him this whole thing. He's like, oh, you're scared? Well, you should be scared, because Christmas is the worst time of the year. Santa Claus doesn't come to give you gifts. He comes to punish the naughty. So if you see Santa Claus, you better run for your fucking life. And then goes back to being like comatose and traumatizes the fucking kid. Well, on the way home, they run into there's a guy in a Santa suit decides to rob a gas station and shoots the clerk. And then his car breaks down. So they pull over to help Santa Claus. But no, it's a psycho killer who shoots his dad, you know, tries to rape his mom, slits her throat, and, like, you know, chases Billy around for a minute. So he ends up going to a hardcore Catholic orphanage where he's kind of abused by the head nun who's, like, hardcore, like, you know, spare the rod, spoil the child, disciplinarian, and, like, you know, beats the hell out of him, kind of forces him to face his fears of, because he's completely, you know, Santa Claus scares the shit out of him, you know, and just basically traumatizes his kid.
Rightfully so.
Yeah. Traumatizes his kid further. Well, when he finally makes it to, like, you know, 18, they send him out into the real world to get a job, and he gets a job as a stock boy at a toy store during Christmas. And, you know, eventually, you know, like I said, he's kind of adjusting to life, but he still has this whole thing, like, you know, scared shitless of the naughty. You know, being naughty is going to get you hurt. And
it's good to have morals.
The Santa Claus calls in sick, so they talk him into being Santa Claus. And eventually, like I said, you know, the girl he's been kind of hitting on ends up, you know, hooking up with one of the other, his coworkers, who turns out to be a douchebag and tries to rape her. And he just finally snaps and is like, starts running around the town, punishing all the naughty people, you know. Kills her, kills him, kills his boss, kills, like, freaking half the town before he finally goes back to the orphanage to try to kill the nun and gets, like, gunned down and like, you know, in front of all the kids. So Santa Claus gets wasted in the middle of an orphanage on Christmas Day. But the only thing, once he snaps, the only thing he says, like, as he's going to move, is like, naughty, naughty. It's so, yeah. And, you know, he's fairly good with an axe.
Fairly good with an axe. So, the whole axe, I mean, that's a similar premise. So, you know, the 2012 film then is almost a spot-on remake.
No, not at all. It's definitely a darker and funnier at the same time. I mean, it goes all the way up on the slasher scale, which that's why this is kind of our number one on our list is the 2012 version, Silent Night, which, like I said, is very loosely based off the original. I think really the only comparison is there is a character named Billy who goes to visit his grandfather, who is also comatose. But this Billy is, you know,
yeah,
a teenager.
Yeah, Santa's good with an axe.
Yeah. So he, you know, they redo that whole scene of, like, grandpa who is, like, comatose, like, coming out and giving him word for word the same scary speech that the original grandfather gave. But that was kind of like the only connection to the original, other than a creepy Santa Claus, you know, wasting the naughty.
So, yeah, I got to say that as far as, I mean, this film straight up fits the slasher genre just about pretty much verbatim. And the reason I put this one at the list is This one had the most variety of violence and, yes, you know, yeah, there are just a lot of interesting tidbits.
Yeah, and this like pretty much starts like from the rip. I mean, the movie starts, I mean, this is like pre-credit sequence. You know, there's a guy in this like, looks like a dirty abandoned house, has a girl like all tied up. And he's making a Santa suit. He's got like those creepy plastic Halloween masks that are kind of a little bit clear and just has like a face painted on it. And like, you know, cuts the mouth out of it and like glues a Santa beard to it and makes this whole like Santa suit. And then goes down in the basement, which is all decorated Christmas, and has this guy tied to a chair with, you know, Christmas lights. And, you know, the guy's like, I'm sorry, I didn't know that was your wife, man. Just let me go. And he's like, I don't give a shit, bro. And he's like, oh, she's not your wife. You're just crazy. And basically electrocutes him with his homemade electric chair with Christmas lights.
Yeah, that's that one was rather interesting. I don't know. Like, whoever I don't know what her character name was, but whoever the girl that played, she's in the same house, but she's upstairs on like the mattress or whatever, but her blood curdling screams were on point.
Yeah, it was definitely Scream Queen award worthy. Yeah, this one directed by Stephen Miller. It had a limited release, but went pretty much straight to video. And for a straight to video horror movie, I mean, it had Malcolm McDowell in it as the town sheriff, and Jamie King is, you know, the deputy Aubrey Bradmore. Which, all right. one thing that annoys the fuck out of me, like, doctors hate watching doctor shows because of bad, like, medical stuff. I hate watching bad police work in movies. It pisses me off. And she is, like, the worst deputy. I mean, she's a great actress, somewhat. She's done some good movies, but she should not, you know, portray a cop. Because, like, literally, like, as the movie starts, before they know this Santa Claus killer is running around wasting the people we'll get into in a second, his, like, you know, he only kills the people he think are naughty and lets other people go, and it's kind of hilarious because he's full-on Santa Claus. They're like, oh, we get a call about a bad smell coming from this abandoned house. You should go check it out. First off, she rolls up, gets out of the car, and automatically smells something, which these people have been dead less than 6 hours. You're not going to smell decomp from the driveway, like, 6 hours later. And then, you know, even though she's smelled,
I don't know, dude. The dude that got electrocuted, the smell of burning flesh is one of those unique smells that you will not
I will give that a pass. But she goes to this abandoned house where she already smells something off, does not draw her gun until she's already walked through the house and found the dead body. You do not clear a house without your weapon out. A, you don't clear a house by yourself. B, you don't clear a house without your weapon out. Like, she was fairly shitty as a police officer.
I mean, maybe she just failed at CQB. I don't know. I mean, well, I mean, the fact, too, that, you know, a perp has her down on the ground and ends up, like, cutting her, and she doesn't, like, try to retaliate or anything. Like, oh, I froze. Like, yeah, that.
Yeah, so actually,
that to me was like, you know, when she called her father, it was like, I'm not cut out for this job. Like, yeah, you're right.
Yeah, exactly.
But this phone call should have happened well into your career before this point.
Yeah. And it's supposed to be like a small town where there's really, you know, they're kind of cut, like, I guess there's like, you know, trees down or something on the one road in town. So really nobody. And it's also their big Christmas festival where they have a Santa parade and a Santa competition. So there's all these Santas running around. All they know is like, we have a killer who has size 13 shoes, and they're like, you know, it's got to be one of the Santa Clauses. And, you know, them trying, and freaking Malcolm McDowell as the sheriff is just like so like gung ho over the top. Like, yeah, we're going to hunt this guy down. You know what it's like to take down a bad guy. You know, he's just like, just freaking hardcore.
I almost felt like that was a setback because it's like, well, you know, you should be, you know, getting some additional assets.
Yeah, he's like, we're
going to
call
him
FBI. We're taking this guy down ourselves.
Yeah, like, that's not going to work out too well, I don't think.
But yeah, like, there's, you know, as he's, like I said, these people that he originally kills were adulterous. And then he ends up, there's a this death I almost cheered for because it's a snotty teenager who is like basically just bossing her mom around. Like, no, you need to go get me something like right now. Just like, bitch, go get your freaking purse. We're going to the mall. And she like opens the door and there's Santa Claus. She's like, what the fuck you want? And she freaking tases her and then like stabs her through the chest with a fire poker.
Yes.
And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, that was one that I was like, all right, this girl cannot be alive for more than 30 seconds. 30 seconds later, like, ooh, golf clap.
Yeah.
Like, very rarely do I root for a child death.
Yeah.
But that was one that was well-deserved.
And then you had the shady motel with the porn producer shooting the films in the
dude,
hotel.
Dude, it's amateur, okay? It's softcore.
But yeah, Santa Claus shows. And the... Of course, the mayor's daughter is the town slut, apparently, and she's there hanging out with the porn people and is just lucky enough to, you know, walk away because they ran out of coke. Somebody had to go call the snowman, as they call him. But yeah, he comes in there, kills like the production assistant, and then stabs the porn photographer producer guy in the taint with like a freaking sickle. Like axe thing. I was like, I think that's the first time I've ever seen a taint get stabbed in a movie. I mean, that alone was like, all right, you get props for creativity.
Yes.
And then, like, the one stripper, like, you know, makes it out complete, well, with just her underwear on, like, completely topless, running through. And that's the one thing that also made this movie creepy, is most of your horror movies are set at night. This one, except for, like maybe, like, the
daylight.
Climax, it's broad daylight, and she's, like, running through the town naked into, like, a Christmas tree lot. And he, of course, like...
Hold on. What's in Christmas tree lots?
Wood chippers. Manages to, like, you know, chop her leg off and then feed her to the wood chipper feet first so it hurts longer. I mean, that was, you know, as it's spraying body parts and everything, you know, I was like, all right, I'll give you props for creativity.
Yeah,
on that one.
I hadn't seen the wood chipper thing. And, you know, when we did our Tales from the Crypt episode, there was an episode I remember that involved a tree chipper, but it was definitely not to that extent nor that graphic. But I got to say, like, it worked brilliantly. Like, I never quite understood why she stopped and then went back toward the tree chipper, though.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, like...
I don't know, she saw, like, a car. I don't know, she...
Every
like she was running to something and, like, nope, just...
Every rule of running from your, you know, captor... Yeah.
Don't
dart,
stop.
She broke.
Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, because, like, yeah, but I was like, I got to say, like, the 10-minute naked chase scene, all right, that's... Classic slasher movie. Someone gets
you
topless.
You only liked it
because
of boobs.
And?
Because boobs. Do you want a slasher film? Because that's how you get slasher films.
Oh, but yeah. And then, yeah, because he sees, like, the one, as he's walking up to the hotel room, he sees the one girl, and she's dressed in, like, slutty Mrs. Claus type thing, and kind of bumps into her a little, but he's like, yeah, doesn't know she's naughty, yes, I get, and she's like, dick, and he turns around and like stares at her creepily for a second and like, oh shit. So yep, you just made his list. Which comes back around with her making out with her boyfriend Billy
this leads to
her dad's guest house.
Yes. Yeah, so I gotta give props here, you know, the whole I'm gonna hang a torso by the antlers of the buck on the wall. Like, I mean, that was some straight up Evil Dead throwback right
there. That, you know, method was also used in the original Silent Night, Deadly Night. So I was like, all right, that's maybe a little bit of a props to that. But yeah, she goes out of the room to, like, go from her slutty dress to something sluttier and comes back. And it's like her boyfriend's gone and she sees, like, the bathroom door kind of open. And he, like, all of a sudden pops out of the closet, like, ha, oh, scared you. She's like, how did you get from the bathroom over there? He's like, I don't know what you're talking about. I've been in the closet the whole time. And like, he goes over, like, looks at him, see, there's nothing in the bathroom. And nope, Santa Claus is behind the door and takes her out and then, you know, freaking axes him to pieces. And then, you know, and strangles her dad with Christmas lights, too, which, you know, was also kind of hilarious.
Yeah, I mean, so there were some, you know... definite highlights, but you know, even as you know,
and as he's living bodies, he leaves a present with everyone he's killed or is going to kill. When they finally open, I was expecting something more gruesome when they opened the package, but it was a lump of coal.
Yeah.
It's like the old thing, like if you're naughty, you're gonna get a lump of coal in your stocking and maybe a axe to the taint.
It's like, crap, we gotta, you know, and finally, like the you know, deputy or whatever realizes that, oh, my parents got one of those gifts or something like
yeah.
that. And
That's the thing, too, since he is only punishing the ones he considers naughty, when he goes to the house and kills the mayor, his daughter, and her boyfriend, the mayor also has a little daughter. He's like, oh, you're my last good child. So, she sees him as Santa Claus, and he's like, you're a good kid, and pulls out and gives her a freaking bloody candy cane, but still, he's carrying around his bag and stuff. He's like, all right, you're on the... And then later on, there's also a creepy priest who's... a pervert and also like stealing money from the church. So he takes all the donations and like pockets half of them. And, he's doing his fire and brimstone speech. And there's an old lady there praying. And then there's, of course, our murderous Santa Claus. So he comes over and sets it, and Santa Claus pulls out a knife, cuts his fingers off, and like shanks him like a prison movie. And then takes the money. And the old lady's like, I promise I won't tell anyone. He just like gives her back the money that the priest has stole from the church and like walks out. He's like, got this weird like moral, moral thing to it.
Yeah, so I mean, this is Claus the vigilante.
Yeah. Like. And eventually you get some, because for most of the movie there is no backstory to this guy, and then the deputy eventually finds this guy who fits the profile, who they turn out is a drug dealer but not the murderer. And he tells her the story about like, oh, there's like this urban legend of this guy who is Ronald Jones, who caught his wife cheating on him and basically burned her alive with a flamethrower, and her boyfriend, left her. And now he goes from like town to town every Christmas murdering people. And she's like, ah, it's just freaking urban legend and stuff. But you find out, no, this is, well, you think it's the guy, cause he's, like I said, he even pulls out the flamethrower and goes after the sheriff at one point. And the sheriff, probably the best dumb line, was like, you just brought a flamethrower to a gunfight. Before he gets roasted.
Yes. instead of the one-liner, you should have already been pulling the trigger.
Yeah, and of course he got, he got a shot off, but he got roasted in the end. And then another highlight of this movie is Donald Logue, who is one of my favorite. He's always good and stuff. He's like the asshole Santa Claus in town. He's like a traveling Santa, and they think he is the killer, because apparently, when she finds his, log sheet or something, or his diary, he had been in one of the towns where these murders had happened. So they're like, oh, it's got to be him. And he just the way they originally come across him is there's so many complaints on him, making the children cry. And he's like, you're not getting anything for Christmas. You're freaking naughty. You greet. And he's like, tell you what, I'm going to leave you some presents. But if they're not there in the morning, it's because your parents sold them on eBay because they're greedy fucks. And he's the only one that actually, has a little bit of a fight with the murderous Santa Claus, because the murderous Santa Claus lets him out of the cell. And he's like, fuck you, fuck Christmas, and fuck your plastic face, and punches him in the face. And they get a little fight going, and then Santa pulls out brass knuckles that say ho ho ho.
Yes.
And beats him to death with brass knuckles. I was like, all right, at least he went out like a man.
Yeah. And it does eventually give a little bit of backstory.
Her father is on the list, and which at first doesn't fit the profile of he only kills the naughty, because he's a retired officer, and they never kind of make that distinction of why he's on the hit list. And after, you finally you get the final battle with where Jamie King's deputy is finally,
spoiler alert,
yeah, it's finally stepped up and kind of starting to be a good cop and fights this guy, and he ends up trying to roast him with his own flamethrower. But he gets away, and you see him heading to the next town with his face all half burned. But then it goes to a flashback where the original Santa Claus, who killed his wife with a flamethrower, a police officer shows up and puts him down. But turns out his kid was in the car and watched all this happen. And the officer who had killed the original Santa Cleaner was her father.
Which is kind of weird, because, there'd already been a murder committed. So it's really kind of odd that the kid snapped mentally and didn't, put two and two together that, oh, my dad just roasted my mom and was in the process of roasting this cop. so it was a little bit of a flawed.
Which then that kind of goes back to the original Silent Night, Deadly Night, where this kid witnessed his parents killed by Santa Claus and eventually snapped. So, it's very loosely tied to the original, but there's a couple cool elements. But yeah, I definitely give this movie props for originality.
Yes, absolutely. And this is by far the goriest of the films.
Is there a particular favorite or particular character in these movies?
The sheriff. It's got to be the sheriff. I mean, just because, I mean, it is what it is. I mean, he has some of the best one-liners. I mean,
so
he's just
stereotypically macho. It's it's just like, hilarious.
You know, just.
And I think that coming too from Malcolm McDowell, who is like a legitimate actor, you know, has been in some great movies and some like weird slasher movies. But yeah, him just playing this asshole sheriff is just kind of hilarious. Yeah, I can say this was probably the one I enjoyed the most. And you know, the rare exports too was, like I said, I really got behind the story of it.
If you're looking for a story, cool original idea movie,
if you don't mind reading subtiles, it's, like I said, I highly recommend this one.
You know, if you just want a good slasher flick that's, you know, kind of got some holiday flair to it, then, you know, it's going to, you know, be Silent Night. but, you know, even with Saint and Black Christmas, I wouldn't necessarily check those off of my holiday list either. So,
yeah, the original one has kind of a slow start to it, but once it gets going, it's pretty cool. And the remake was just a dumb horror movie. I mean, it was, like I said, I it's one of those just like watching Friday the 13th or something on Halloween. You start your new Christmas tradition of falling down the Christmas horror hole, which that should be a name for a Christmas-themed haunted house, the horror hole.
Yeah. Quick. Trademark.
So as we wrap up, any final thoughts on the Oscar here?
Yeah, it's awesome. So go and pick one up and smoke it.
Yeah, I do like it, because I do. I've had the original Leaf Maduro and the Connecticut. I do like this. Got that little more peppery of having that Habano wrapper. It's got a little bit more kick than the you know, the original, a good smooth smoke. This one kind of just takes up a little bit more.
Yeah,
you like that stronger. You know, it's still, I'd say, a medium plus, but it's a little bit stronger than the originals. So yeah, I'm definitely digging this. I'd like to get a hold of some of the 60s and try that one.
Yeah, you know, I mean, this is, you know, probably been the third or fourth time I've had this cigar now, and you know, each time has been a very enjoyable experience.
All right, and with that, we'll be right back.
Christmas is here, and I'm drunk again. Should I open my present or go back to bed? Every year's just the same, so why even care? I've got a feeling that we've been misled. One drink for Santa Claus, one drink for me, one drink to get us through this white misery.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
Welcome back, and it's time for Beer 30.
Yeah!
Since it's Christmas. Welcome to the North Pole. We got fun and reindeer games.
Jesus.
So what are we drinking this
week? I can't fix that.
So what are we drinking this week, Brad?
Up next, we've got another beer out of Wicked Weed Brewing. This is called Milk and Cookies, because why? Santa enjoys his milk and cookies.
And I gotta say, if I was the Santa Claus, I'd much rather have this milk and cookies waiting for me than actual milk and cookies.
I'd be okay with both.
Yep.
I'd be okay with this and a side of cookies.
Ooh, dip some cookies in this?
Might be onto something. Ooh. So, you know, this beer here is definitely high up on the malty scale, as you know the name implies. So this is actually a Imperial Milk Stout with golden raisin, cinnamon, and vanilla. So everything festive and holidays this beer kind of has in it. For me, when I drink this, definitely the milk stout comes through. And then on the back end of my palate, I start getting some of the raisins. Haven't got much of the cinnamon or vanilla in it yet, but we did just pull this out of the fridge, so it might need to come up to temp a little bit.
Yeah, it's definitely like a smooth, like I don't know, milkshake quality to it. I mean, it's... Oh.
It's
definitely a milk stout.
Yeah, I mean it's creamy. It's everything that you would want in a milk stout, and you know the beauty of it is it doesn't sit extremely heavy on the stomach or anything. This actually drinks, you know, really smooth, and you know has a great full mouthfeel, but doesn't weigh heavy on the stomach.
Yeah, well, like I said, a lot of stouts. It's yeah, it's about one and done because you know you're full like you had a meal afterward. And this one, like I said, I'm not getting that fullness. It's definitely one I could probably drink a couple of these. You know, as their shipment says, hints of cold milk, sweet vanilla, and hearty oatmeal is the flavor notes they say you should pick up with this. And yeah, like to me, it tastes almost like a, I don't know, like a vanilla shake almost with a little bit of that oatmeal taste to it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I forgot the last beer that we drank from Wicked Weed, but I mean, it was.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
It was good. This is good. I don't know. They're not too far away. I think that they are in...
North Carolina.
Yeah, North Carolina. So I may need to make a trip up to Asheville and, you know, see if I can't get it from the tap.
Yeah. It's
maybe do a flight.
I mean, it is an imperial stout, too, so 8.5% alcohol. So, you know, you drink enough of these, you are going to be jolly.
We were jolly to begin with. We already had you busting out in song and rhyme from just the Christmas horror. So, I mean the aroma from this beer, I definitely get some. I get the vanilla and I get the cinnamon from the aroma.
Yeah, and as it warms up a little, I'm definitely starting getting some of that raisiny oatmeal taste to it,
which. I gotta say, man, like it just works. I mean, yeah. I never really thought about dumping raisins into a glass of, you know, beer, but I mean, it's jiving. I'm digging it.
So, what are you gonna rate this one on the Cigarnerds Untappd scale?
I'm at a 4.5.
Yeah, I could definitely drink many of these.
Yeah,
unfortunately, we only found one. So,
yeah. This was in limited quantity, so we got the last bottle at the place that we stopped in. But you know, props to the guy that recommended it. He knows who he is. He's a avid listener. So yeah, I just got to I gotta come in, man. That was an awesome suggestion. Very fitting for this episode. A phenomenal beer. Yeah, I want to shut up talking about
I normally try to avoid his recommendations just on you know, on purpose because I like to troll him a little bit, but he's on point with this one.
Yeah, troll. But yeah, I absolutely freaking awesome. So, you know, shout out to Wicked Weed. Shout out to Dawson Fine Wine. Shout out
also,
to Jason. You know, I mean, shout out to Shenanigans.
Mid Shenanigans.
What else?
Also, like a beer we reviewed, I believe it was last Christmas, is now back on the shelves, which was the local beer Jekyll Brewing's Redneck Christmas Stout. That I also highly recommend picking up while it's available, because that's one I really enjoyed from last Christmas episode.
Yes, and you know we've been waiting all year on that one.
We should go do the Jekyll tour again, see if they have it on tap currently, since it is that time of the year.
Yes, that would be awesome. I would really like to. I'd like to find 420 or Sweetwater's Happy Ending on tap.
Yeah, I know the festive ale is out now. I've seen that in stores, so pick up a couple of those. That's another good Christmas beer.
So you know, a few different recommendations there for you folks. So get out, experiment, let us know your thoughts,
you know,
your feedback,
you spend, and you know, far too much time with your families and in laws over Christmas. You may need a few beers. So you know, you got a list of some good Christmas, you know. Holiday themed.
Yeah, I always start out with a few beers, but then it quickly digresses to whiskey.
Or yeah, it's the time of year for nog. You know, break you out some nog.
Yeah, I've been seeing. Apparently, Evan Williams has come out with some.
Yeah, they've got their own pre-mixed nog, and you know, always just like regular nog. Pour some Southern Comfort in it. Yeah, you know, I don't really like drinking Southern Comfort on its own, but it's a good nog mixer.
So, all right, perfect. Any additional thoughts, feedback, quips, queries, concerns?
Yeah, time to have another.
Yes.
Ho, ho, ho.
More beers. More hoes. We're out.
The Monster Sci-Fi Show Podcast. delivers the latest sci-fi news, plus movie and TV reviews with brilliant and insightful commentary. If you haven't listened to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast before, you will listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast now.
What, you think you're some kind of Jedi waving your hand around like that?
Watto, I'm telling everyone to listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast.
No, they won't.
Yes, they will, including you.
No, they won't. I'm a Tritarian. Mind tricks don't work on me. Only money.
Okay, I don't have money, but please listen to the Monster Sci-Fi Show podcast. Sci-fi, from a certain point of view.
Yes, science! And welcome back. It's time for some science! You ready to learn all there is to learn in the 15 minutes we have here?
Let's do it.
All right. Yeah, I tried to find some like Christmas science, but I really couldn't find any Christmas science articles.
Trees grow on Earth.
There you go. Santa's a Time Lord. That's the only way he can get around the Earth, you know, in a single night. He has to have a TARDIS. Santa's sleigh is a TARDIS, apparently.
That could be a thing.
Well, speaking of stuff that used to be a thing, Pokemon Go. Anybody remember that game?
Remember?
How it like blew up and everyone was obsessed with it for all of, you know, a month and a half.
And then they took a great thing and kind of destroyed it.
Yeah. Well, you know, the whole big thing of the, you know, augmented reality and what they were at least attempting to do was like, oh, this is going to be great. It's going to cause people to get out and walk more and, you know, cause more activities.
I mean, it did. Like, people gave their lives for the cause.
For a brief period, apparently. Because a recent study from co-author, this is Christian Sularin and Eric Rim of Harvard T.H. Chin School of Public Health actually, you know, looked into whether or not this game actually did, in fact, increase more activity. And what they found was not so much. It was a little bit overhyped, like the game itself. In this survey, they found the average Pokemon Go player, which I kind of find this offensive, they said was younger, lower education and income, obese, and mostly single. I take offense to this because, well, all right, I am obese, and I was single at the time I was playing it. But damn it, I have a college degree, and I make a decent bit of money. And I'm old, so like I said, like, fuck you. Not all of us were young, broke school kids.
I mean, I'm just wondering, like, you know, what was their sample pool? Because
I don't know.
I see a lot of studies, and, you know, it's really easy to draw a particular conclusion, but, you know, what most studies will do is find people that are already biased, so their results are far skewed in their particular direction anyway. So,
what they found was initially upon first downloading the game, it did increase exercise up to an extra 1,000 steps a day, but within 6 weeks of starting the game, most people's level of activity was back down to pre-installation levels.
Yeah, because they started fucking up the game. Like, can we do a direct correlation here between this was a good game versus, oh, we started making updates and breaking shit and it gradually became a bad game?
I say, yeah, I think I fell into this too, because like when it first started off, I was like, you know, doing a lot more exploring and walking. But yeah, after a while, it's like, all right, this is the same shit. Like,
yeah, but what happened? An update was made, and it's like, oh, well, you know, we've made Pokemon, you know, spawn less and, you know, more geographically accurate or whatever. So what did you do? Not find shit. What else did you do? Stop playing the game and uninstall.
Yeah, there's no reason to walk 3 miles. I'm not going to find anything in those 3 miles. Also, like, you know, when the game first came out, I cheated a lot. It was like, I just drive around in my car to unlock stuff. But then when they updated it, it was like, no, they put like a speed limit on the game where you had to be traveling so slow that there was no way to do it in a car. So I was like, yeah, whatever. I was like, I don't play games to, I mean, this was a novel idea and it had at least short term positive effects, but I don't play video games to be more active. If I want to be more active, I actually go for a walk or I go to the gym and work out. If I'm playing games, that's my relaxing and do nothing time. I want to sit on a couch with a bag of Doritos and a beer and not move if I don't have to. That's why I don't even get, like, you know, the Wii games and the PlayStation Motion stuff. I'm like, no, I don't want to sweat while I'm playing a game. This is like me chilling the fuck out time.
But once again, they're not great games.
That as well. I mean, I'm down with, like, you know, I haven't had a chance to get my hand on any of the VR stuff yet. But then again, you know, there is movement, but not a lot. It's mainly, I can still sit on the couch and just look around and go, hey, this looks cool. I don't have to actually run 3 miles to level up my damn character.
Yet, but instead you're going to be running 3 miles in place. It's going to get me!
Yeah, so it was, like I said, it was a novel approach. It blew up for a little bit and actually did have the positive effects that they originally intended. It just did not have longevity. And people was like, yeah, I'm tired of walking. Fuck this. I'm going to go back to sitting on my couch and playing Angry Birds or whatever the fuck people play on their phones these days. And I really sounded like a grumpy old man. And
yeah, I did.
Get off my lawn, you damn kids.
You boys better not be whacking my tool shed.
I did see one, like, advertisement for a, I think it was a Kickstarter augmented reality game where it was a first-person shooter, and you went around shooting your friends with your phone, and, like, when you looked at the phone, it actually made, like, a little gun icon, like your first-person shooter games. It's like, that might be an interesting thing to, you know, run around hunting your buddies and getting into random shootouts with you know, general public. But I was like, that one I might actually play.
So what you're saying is the level of violence just wasn't there for you.
Exactly. I mean, even the augmented reality part was cool for a minute. And then, like, I eventually turned that shit off where it was just, you know, the regular animated background instead of the camera stuff because the camera stuff killed the battery.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, so much stuff is, you know, freaking, yeah, you know, it kills your battery. It just, I don't know. I mean, it's got to be a matter of convenience and stuff like that. So, I mean, I'll say that there was a good premise, you know, just I think the initial vision was lost in translation and, you know, what the fans wanted, unfortunately, just wasn't delivered. So a lot of people, you know, as quick as they were to jump the bandwagon, jump ship.
Yeah, like, so that 6 weeks timetable is pretty accurate because that's probably about how long I played it before I finally deleted it off my phone. But from, you know, walking around here to walking around in space, NASA is testing a new satellite recovery system that they call the ExoBreak, which basically satellites in space, as they age out, so we, you know, or break down, we can't have junk floating around cluttering up the atmosphere. And right now, basically what they do is they have, which are rocket-based, where it will slow it down and re-enter into the Earth's atmosphere, where it will, you know, burn up or at least fall in a, you know, non-dangerous location. But that's a very complicated system that has the potential to break down. And as we know, in most things in life, keep it simple, stupid. So the ExoBreak is basically a space parachute. The satellite they're testing now is the TechEd Sat-5, which will deploy a parachute, and basically what it does is slows down the satellite so it can be recaptured by Earth's gravity and pulled back into the Earth instead of out of its current orbit status.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So yeah, it's a very simple system, so it's, you know, hard to
but who cares?
Hard to jack up.
If it's simple, it works.
Yeah. And that it's also something they're testing for possible, you know, recovery stuff. Like, as you know, right now, to get results or tests or objects from the space station or whatever our next level space exploration project is, you know, someone actually has to go up there and get it and bring it back. But now they could possibly, you know, drop these things, deploy the parachute, and actually, you know, have it parachute back to Earth or in our eventual, you know, Mars explorations and stuff. It, you know, this technology could be used to help, you know, landing craft or, you know, the next gen rovers and stuff, you know, land on the planets a little bit safer with this, you know, parachute technology. Space skydiving.
Hmm. That could be fun.
Because yeah, all technology eventually winds up in, you know, civilian recreational hands.
At some capacity, anyway.
Yeah, I do that whole, like, you know, orbit parachuting trip instead of, you know, Like, you think you're high in a plane. We're going to go all the way up. Space skydive.
And nothing can stop me. I'm all the way out of Earth's atmosphere.
Yeah, breaking out the squirrel suits from space. And as long as we're talking about NASA and space, normally we don't talk about celebrity deaths here in science, but you know, this one was kind of scientific, definitely had scientific impact. John Glenn passed away since our last recording, and anyone who doesn't know John Glenn, he is definitely on the list of true American heroes. This guy was the, he was the first man to orbit the Earth. He was also the fifth man in space. But before he became, the first astronaut, because, he started off as a fighter pilot or a military pilot, because the original astronauts were all military test pilots. And he was part of what they called the Mercury 7, which was a group of military test pilots that were chosen to be the first astronauts as America started trying to go into space. And he has the record of being the first man to orbit the Earth. He orbited the Earth three times in his attempt. And like I said, it's not only is that the guy's whole history is insane. I mean, he started off as basically dropped out of college to join the Army Air Corps during World War II, but never got deployed. So he ended up joining the Navy and was eventually transferred to the Marines and became a Marine pilot during World War II, where he flew 59 combat missions during World War II. And later in the Korean War, flew 63 combat missions in the Korean War, 27 of those as a, because he started off as Marine pilots are, close support for ground troops, bombers, strafers, stuff like that. But, as we know for the movie Top Gun, the ultimate test of your piloting skill is, aircraft-to-aircraft combat. So he eventually transitioned into fighter pilot status, where he confirmed shot down three planes during the Korean War in his 27 combat missions as a fighter pilot. And after the war, became a test pilot. Yes. And, test pilots are like, the best of the best, or the guy's crazy enough to fly up in something that's not completely checked out as safe.
I mean, it's been checked. It just,
yeah, there's by these guys.
Yeah.
Yeah, I said he eventually went on from being a pilot to being part of the Mercury 7 program, which was the first guys in space before Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin landed on the moon. It was these guys going up into space.
Well, I mean, just to put it in a little bit of perspective for folks, he was actually the oldest person to fly in space at the age of 77. Think of most people at 77 years old. What are they doing?
Dude, I ain't going to make it to 77.
Good. Legit point there, but I mean, that just speaks to, I mean.
And one of the reasons why this guy wasn't a part of the original Apollo programs was he became like too famous. He was like a national hero for his first space work. And they're like, this guy is too much of a poster boy for NASA. We don't want to risk losing him on this trip to the moon. So there's no way in hell we're letting him back into space. He's too good as a face for NASA. But after he got out of the astronaut program, he went on to become a U.S. senator and was a senator from like the mid 70s up to 99. So when he did that trip to on the shuttle, and he was still a sitting U.S. senator. Like, what other senators do we have, congressmen we have doing crazy shit like that? I mean, this is like, ultimate. This guy is permanent, man card. I mean, there's no way you could take this. As a senator, you're like, hey guys, I'm going to take a break from Congress and go up in space and chill out a bit.
We'll probably still get more shit done up there than what you guys are actually doing in congressional office right now.
Yeah, not only was he, like I said, accomplished astronaut, whatever. As a military pilot, he is one of a ton of decorations. He has. Let me see here. It's. Maybe I didn't write it down. He has six Distinguished Flying Crosses and 18 clusters of the Air Medal. I mean, which is given out for distinguished service as a pilot. So yeah, the dude has definitely had a big life, and like I said, one of the legitimate American heroes and advanced not only science but just, you know, aircraft. Like I said, he's guys like Buzz Aldrin, Neil Armstrong, John Glenn came before those guys, and he is like the original American spaceman.
That's awesome.
And also the only person to ever fly in the Mercury program and the modern shuttle program. So that's an achievement that will never be repeated, because both those programs don't exist anymore.
I mean, that just, you know, speaks to how badass of a guy this is. I mean, you know, 2016, you suck.
Oh, yeah. And some of the stuff, even like in his business life, he like owned hotels and ran like, he was an executive for RC Cola. I mean, the guy had like a huge life up to this point. And like I said, he will definitely be one who goes down in history. And with that, we'll be right back.
Stay tuned.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome to Nerd News.
Yeah, news.
So, just to go ahead and get the shenanigans started here. You ever watched Doctor Who?
Who?
Exactly.
Oh.
Just the Doctor.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've watched that.
Yeah.
I vaguely remember something by that name.
You ever heard of a guy named David Tennant?
Fuck yeah, Doctor Number 10.
Absolutely.
My favorite doctor.
So there's a little TV show that's about to reemerge from our childhood called DuckTales.
Woohoo.
Exactly. So
that's impossible to say that name without doing the sound.
Exactly. Like, yeah,
that's how hard that theme song has permeated our culture.
Yes. Well, for us anyway, because we grew up with it. But there may be listeners that are like, DuckTales? What are DuckTales?
It's not those things that you do in the selfie photos. Those are duck lips. No, DuckTales was a badass cartoon from like the early 90s.
Yes. You know, in fact, man, that was probably one of the hardest games on Nintendo that I remember playing. And this is original NES. None of this Wii or Nintendo 64 bullshit that your modern kids are playing with.
Old school, where you got to blow it and tap it.
Yeah. And sometimes you got to put something on top of it just to compress it just that extra millimeter for it to read just right. And hopefully nobody makes any sudden movements.
Back in the day, kids, we didn't have downloadable games or CD drives. We had cartridges.
Yes. And even the cartridges themselves had batteries.
Yeah.
Anyway, so DuckTales is making a comeback, and David Tennant will actually be voicing as Scrooge McDuck, which is awesome because we have an actual Scotsman voicing Scrooge McDuck.
Yeah, he doesn't have to do an English accent or American accent anymore. He can be as Scottish as he wants to be.
Yes, and I think it's going to be awesome. We'll post a link to it, but one of the cool things is I found a, you know, talking about how iconic the theme song is, like all of the cast members like doing different portions of the theme song for DuckTales.
Nice.
So I thought that was awesome. You know, it looks like, you know, Kate McCucci is going to, from Garfunkel and Oates, we'd made some inappropriate references to some of the songs that they have done in the past. She's actually going to be doing some of the voicing, you know, as Webby. You know, so I gotta say, man, I'm excited to see what this, you know, reemergence is going to be like.
Yeah, because if they're bringing back the whole DuckTales universe, I can't wait for the redone Darkwing Duck. Because as much as I love Darkwing Duck, was bad. It was like Duck Batman.
Yes, Darkwing Duck was absolutely awesome. You know,
and freaking Launchpad McQuack. Yes. Oh, I used to love that show. That whole, have you ever seen the realistic DuckTales video?
I don't think I've seen that.
It's horrific. It will haunt you if you ever watch it, so don't go watch it unless you're like really expecting it. Like, they even have, like, you know, he'd always dive into the money pit and swim around, And I think in the video he dives and like breaks his neck and is paralyzed.
Oh no!
It's so bizarre.
Oh, that doesn't need to be a thing.
Yeah,
but I don't know. I mean, I think it's awesome that, you know, stuff from our childhood is now, you know, getting remastered. And
the animation style then are now the studio executives, yes, and showrunners of today.
Like, remember when things were successful?
Like, back in the day, you know, it was like, bro, it'd be cool if they brought back DuckTales. And now people actually have the power to, like, you know, make those stoned conversations actual things.
Scooby Dooby? Nah, man, that's too much of a drug reference. Scooby Doo! So, speaking of Darkwing Duck being DuckTales, you know, kind of the whole Batman thing. Little mention about something. So Ben Affleck's solo Batman movie is set for 2018. So that must mean, you know, that folks are happy with the script and everything to that extent, and it's going to.
Yeah, I think next year we're getting Justice League and Aquaman.
So yes,
finally get solo Batman.
Yeah, and that was one of the highlights of Batman vs Superman is Ben Affleck. So like, yeah. I'm not quite sure how badass it's going to be yet. You know, that's still...
Well, they may have finally learned their lesson, because I liked Suicide Squad. It wasn't a bad movie, so maybe, you know, they've, you know, kind of improved. And the first trailer for Justice League actually looked...
Yeah, it looked good. Yes.
So, like, we'll see. I mean, I'll give it a try. It's no Marvel movie, but I won't ignore it completely. I will give it a... I may not be there opening night, but I will definitely give it a watch eventually.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing is, you know, you know, the DC television stuff has been pretty good.
So much better.
Like, I really wish that, you know, the freaking producers and everything else that are doing the films will learn from the TV series success and be able to, you know, reposition that onto the big screen.
Hey, Kevin Smith's been directing a lot of the DC TV shows. Let's get us a Kevin Smith directed DC movie.
I mean that could very well work out. I mean, he's done phenomenal on,
yeah, his episodes,
you know,
have been on, you know, Flash and stuff have been good. I don't know if his Supergirl episode's been released yet, but yeah, it's been good.
I mean, you know, and you know, folks are like, oh, Kevin Smith, he can't do anything serious, and I'm like, what the? He just proved you wrong.
Yeah.
Like, so, up next, you
Batman
know...
Batman fighting Nazi sausages. Like, mm-hmm, a little Yoga Hosers Batman crossover.
Not today, brats. Not today. We had the Bratsy party.
God. I gotta sit down and watch that.
Little Tusk reference for you folks out there.
Anyway, you were saying.
There's been some Star Wars news. I'm sorry, not Star Wars news. There's been a lot of that. We'll get into that later. But Star Trek. God, that's going to start a fan war.
You might get cut.
Remember Darth Tater? yeah, that very well possibly get me cut. Jesus, lost my train of thought.
Star Trek news.
Shaniqua Martin Green, who plays Sasha on The Walking Dead, has been cast for the Star Trek movie.
Sounds like somebody's going to get bit.
Yep. I would be kind of curious to see
how not happened already, because I've not watched like the last five episodes. So.
Yeah, that could be a thing. I mean, they already took out Abraham, yeah. So you know, she may not be far behind. But apparently she's going to be playing Rainsford, a lieutenant commander with Cabot's aboard the USS Discovery.
Interesting.
Yep. So, you know, I would definitely like to see what plays out, and you know, who knows? I haven't seen it spoiled on anything, even though I'm like several episodes behind in The Walking Dead now. Luckily, I think everything's wrapped up for them.
Yeah, they're mid-season break, so.
So I didn't see any major spoilers, so I assume she's probably still there, but...
So far.
Who knows?
Maybe I'll get caught up in the next week or so while Christmas is going on.
Yeah, I plan on spending some time in front of the idiot box and trying to clear off some of the DVR backlog I got going on myself. Up next, in some video game news, little Tom Clancy. There is a new Ghost Recon Wildlands game in the works, and it's actually open for beta now. So you can actually, go into Ubisoft website and register. But, I've been playing some, going back and replaying Borderlands and stuff like that, and really getting involved in some of these, open world style games. Yeah. Very much with Far Cry 4, Far Cry Primal, that type of stuff. And, this game looks unique because it's basically going to be open world. There's going to be multiple ways to play the game. So it's not going to be, you've got a stealth mission here or whatever. It basically allows you to go in ever how you choose, and the game is going to adapt and, change the outcome depending on the choices that you make.
I'm not very stealthy. My whole stealth game is like, I sneak in for like 30 seconds and it becomes kill everyone.
Yes.
If everyone's dead, there's no one to tell me it wasn't stealthy.
And, that's kind of where this game is going, is apparently, they're kind of going the direction, it looks like, a Battlefield, where, all vehicles and stuff like that are going to, be able to be controlled and things to that extent. So looks like some really awesome dynamics, and I'm really curious to see what that means from a multiplayer perspective. I mean,
maybe in your multiplayer,
just have, people run around having backhoe battles or something. Never know.
You can get a whole little, capture the flag. One group can be the terrorists and have to defend the objective, while the other people get to be the operators and try to come in and take them out. Might be an interesting game element.
Yeah, so this is supposed to be set in, Bolivia. So you're going to get, snowy regions, mountain.
And by snow, we mean cocaine?
maybe. You just never know. So I'm just really, curious to see how, the game plays out. I've been a big fan of just about everything that Tom Clancy has done, from the books to the games, the whole nine yards. So I digress from that to say that let's talk about little bit of thing about Star Wars. We finally I was surprised. We went and saw the movie opening night, and I guess most people just didn't realize that Thursday was the opening night because the theater was relatively quiet.
Yeah, because, back in the day, it stuff came out on Friday, so if you wanted to see it early, there was a midnight release. But since some of the movie theater shootings of now, it's like our midnight release is actually like a 7:30 release on a Thursday. So yeah, we went into that right after work and got in there opening night, and it was relatively, empty theater. There was only maybe 20 people in there.
Yeah, it was awesome. So we're not going to give away any spoilers or anything to that extent, but want to share some thoughts because I've seen, mixed feedback, browsing the interwebs and stuff. And
there's two type of people: people who like Rogue One and people that are wrong.
Yeah. I mean, I gotta say, it was an awesome break, being able to just see, all the different squads and the space battles and everything else, and the story not be focused just on four individuals.
Yeah, I mean, this, without giving anything away, is basically the first war movie set in the Star Wars universe. I mean, I've heard it compared to, Black Hawk Down of the Star Wars universe, because it's not about individual characters, it's about a team and its mission. And, it's like that, and even though it's, like I said, the one-off, I thought it was better than Episode 7, because Episode 7, I liked it in the initial viewing of it, because, hey, it's Star Wars.
But, and, oh my God, it looked amazing.
Yeah, but afterward, I'm like, I really do not give a shit about any of the new characters. I mean, the people that I want to see were barely in the movie, or killed off in the movie. But I cared about these characters, even though they were new characters and, was a new era, or not era, but time frame in the Star Wars universe. But this one actually looked like Star Wars. I mean, it was visually amazing. I mean, gritty, realistic as you can be in a galaxy far, far away. But the universe looked lived in and grimy and dirty. It looked like a war film. They just happened to be stormtroopers and, X-Wings.
Yeah, and for me, you know, we sit around, we play a lot of the, you know, X-Wing miniature game and stuff like that. And, you know, this film...
Which means
like,
new ships.
Yes, yeah. You know, but this film felt like, you know, when we're doing some of either the campaign missions of the game or, you know, we're just doing some of the dogfights and stuff like that. And, you know, you're not always using, you know, freaking... You know, Han Solo and R2-D2 and stuff like that. So, you know, you're using some of the lesser-known pilots and
that's
things.
Like, you know, like I said, I've read almost, except for some of the new stuff that's come out, which I need to update my list, pretty much all the Star Wars books. And my favorite books have been the ones about the X-Wing pilots and the soldiers instead of the hero classic characters. I think those, like... They're more relatable because they're more realistic characters.
Yeah, they're not so larger than life.
Yeah. And like I said, this and the, something that it kind of, I mean, there was a little bit of it in episode 7, but space battles. Like that's, I want to see some epic space battles in Star Wars. And this gives you your, not only space battles, but ground battles and everything else. And like I said, it kind of gave me those things I was wanting in episode 7 that I really did not get a hold of. And it's an original idea. Episode 7 is basically an almost shot-for-shot reboot of freaking episode 4, where this one was a new and original story.
Yes.
So, yeah, I'm really liking these one-off movies that they have decided to, you know, drop in between, you know, whatever they're calling the trilogy films, the saga films. Yeah, I'm digging this whole concept of this is like a one-off story that takes place in the universe that, you know, you're not familiar with. It's just in kind of tying all of it together.
Yeah. And, you know, so what do you think this does as far as if you were recommending, you know, somebody watch the Star Wars films, you know, as far as the order you would go in?
Well, technically from the time frame, it takes place before episode 4, but I would almost recommending watching the original trilogy first, because then you see all the spots this movie is connected to the original trilogy. And like I said, if someone's going into blind, which I, if you've not seen the original Star Wars, what the fuck are you doing watching Rogue One? I think you're going to get more enjoyment knowing that original story than just going in, you know, absolutely blind.
No, I think that's a fair assessment. I don't know. I you know, I definitely kind of saw this as the, you know, the whole precursor to Empire. So,
No. Earlier than that.
Well, yeah.
New Hope.
New Hope. That's it.
But it does feel a lot like Empire. I mean, yeah. It's just so good. And maybe in another couple episodes, we can get past the spoiler warnings and really
talk
about
it. I wanted to give it, you know, at least a...
Yeah, it's opening week. Yeah, there's people, especially with the holidays going on, there's plenty of people that probably have not been able to see it.
You know,
it
on the next episode,
I'm going to see it tomorrow.
We will do, yeah, again. You know, so on the next episode, we'll make it a point to talk about in greater detail and not do a spoiler-free. But, you know, for folks that are teetering and not quite sure, I would absolutely say go out and see this movie.
That's been the hardest part, is not talking about it with some of my friends that haven't had the time to go see it. I mean, like I said, my girlfriend had, you know, couldn't see it, and she's like, I'm not going to hold it against you if you go see it without me. I'm like, thank you, because I'm going to go see it tonight.
Even if I don't tell you, I'm still going.
Yeah, I'm like, I promise I'll take you to see it as soon as you can see it, but I'm seeing the shit tonight. Oh, but yeah, like I said, that's...
There is no truer love than Star Wars. Star Wars was here before, it'll be here after, man.
So you're getting me in trouble. I'm not agreeing with your statement.
I said it. I'll take the falls. It'll be okay.
You've already got punched once today. So, she may only have one arm, but she's feisty. She'll take a swing at you.
And with that.
And also, while we... I don't think it made the notes list here, but we... there. While we were seeing Star Wars, there was a teaser trailer for the new Pirates of the Caribbean movie.
Yeah, and Pirates of the Caribbean, man. I gotta say, like, I kind of fell off that bandwagon a little bit, but I'm slowly finding myself, like, getting back into the whole.
Yeah, because the last one, like, they stopped doing, like, the main trilogy, and now they're just dropping these one-off movies. And the last one that came out, I mean, it was okay, but it wasn't that great. But this one, well, from the it's a teaser trailer, so we don't even see Jack Sparrow in it. But the new bad guys that are... They didn't look like the skeleton pirates of the original or the fish pirates of, like, the last two. They're almost like these weird, like, ghost pirates, and it kind of looked badass.
Yes. Because ghost.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'll definitely give that one a try whenever it comes out.
Absolutely. And, I you know, some of the other ones, Guardians, we talked about that. Spider-Man, I think we also talked about that. You know, it was just awesome being able to see it on the big screen. Just really changes the dynamics for me.
Ah, and anything else to impart upon the listeners?
Nope.
All right. And with that, check us out on the ESNO Network at ESOpodcast.com. Check us out on our page, Cigar Nerds Podcast, CigarNerdPodcast.com. We're on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, at Cigar Nerd Pod. Go buy some Strikeforce, StrikeForceEnergy.com, promo code Cigar Nerds. And also a shout out, we've had these cool Cigar Nerds smoking shirts through RealMenSmokeCigars.com for sale. Someone actually ordered some recently, so thank you to the listener who bought those, and everyone go buy some more. Look cool for the New Year's. And with that, I'll leave you with this Christmas quote. Never bring a flamethrower to a gunfight.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We're your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.